Hi, everyone. My name is Samantha Gross. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you very much, Charity, for inviting me. This is my first time presenting at a conference, so I'm very grateful for the opportunity. Thank you. So today I'm going to be talking about medical-legal partnerships, which I will be referring to as MLPs pretty much throughout. And specifically what our research looked at is how we're training both healthcare provider students and legal law students to someday work in a collaborative environment, because so often traditionally those schools were siloed and collaboration was not taught. We're seeing that it is starting to be taught, which is wonderful. Okay, so just to do a little back up and talk about what are medical legal partnerships. The National Center for MLP, which is centered in Washington, D.C., breaks it up into three levels, the first of which is providing direct legal assistance in a healthcare setting. The second aspect is developing strategies to improve health and enhance legal access. And then the third piece is changing policies to ensure that people get and stay healthy. The quintessential example, and we actually already heard this today, is a patient who comes into the healthcare setting with asthma, despite pediatrician's advice, is not getting better, and further questions reveal that there's mold in the home, mold in the rental unit. This is a legal issue that has a health consequence, and it's a situation where a lawyer could help resolve the problem so that nobody else gets sick and so this kid can get better. So we use the acronym IHELP to discuss the types of legal issues that could be addressed in a medical legal partnership, and this is, it's slim. I think that there's a lot more to it, and maybe we need to even increase the acronym. So I stands for income, which includes insurance, child support, food and nutrition, and disability. H stands for housing and utilities, which include public housing, landlord-tenant issues, and the habitability issues like mold, smoke, lead in the home. Education includes school safety and special education. Legal status includes citizenship, asylum, and access to services for immigrants. And personal safety includes interpersonal violence, custody, and guardianship issues. Do MLPs help? So social science literature has found that have been some positive showings as MLPs started about 10 years ago. One study found improved pregnancy outcomes, lower rates of child abuse and neglect in prenatal and postpartum patients. Another found that adding an MLP increased awareness of and access to legal services. And a third study that just worked with urban asthmatic adults found that adding an MLP reduced hospital admissions. MLPs are not uniform. It varies how we're bringing a lawyer into the fray. Sometimes they're hired into the system salaried, they're there every day. It's an integral piece of the healthcare setting. Other times we have volunteer law students that come in and help out, sometimes with an attorney, sometimes the attorney is off-site. Oftentimes there'll be pro bono attorneys from large law firms donating their time, and sometimes it's a partnership with pre-existing legal aid societies. So it really depends. When we talk about MLP, it could be a lot of different things. In some situations as well, there's an educational aspect, which is really where we focused our research and what I'm interested in the most, where there's a partnership between the MLP and schools, both professional schools and undergraduate, where students have an opportunity to come in and work with patients, clients. MLPs are growing in number. We're starting to see them kind of crop up in a lot of places. And at the same time, there aren't that many opportunities yet, and it's certainly growing, to train people to work in this type of environment. And I think it's really important. And along with that, the accrediting bodies, the ABA and the AAMC, don't have a set for how to do this. It's not regulated, and it's not required. So our goals in doing this research were to gather information on MLP education, to understand the barriers and facilitators to integrated training of students, and to make policy recommendations. So we received University of Pennsylvania IRB approval to conduct 10 semi-structured interviews with key informants. What we wanted to do is speak with educators from a variety of disciplines, lawyers, social workers, healthcare providers, all across, and also from nationwide. So didn't want to just get sort of the East Coast and West Coast. Really tried to get everywhere and get a sense of what's going on. Presenters were chosen from their participation in the MLP Summit last year. And then sort of snowballing from that, I also asked the presenters to indicate other people who might be leaders in the field. And then the National Center for Medical Legal Partnership also identified people who they thought would be good people to talk to. So I had 10 participants, and I had 20 to 30-minute telephone conversations with each that were then transcribed verbatim, and we conducted member checking so that each participant had an opportunity to review their transcript and make redactions necessary. We used InVivo 10 to facilitate thematic analysis. It was then double-coded, and we had an 85% agreement. So in speaking with both healthcare providers and lawyers that are conducting this education, the areas that we were interested in predominantly were, what are their ideal models of MLP education? What are their challenges and facilitators to actually doing this work? What is their model? What are they currently doing on the ground working with students? And what educational tools and resources are they currently using? What's out there? What's available? Okay, so in looking at themes that all were around MLP education, and I'll take each one in turn and discuss it. Participants identified that interprofessional education is critical. This is really just repeating everything we heard earlier, so it's wonderful to hear. That makes me feel great. There are both barriers and facilitators to doing this work. There are many different models for providing education, and that they do have an ideal model if there were no funding constraints, no other barriers. So, all 10 participants identified education that is interprofessional is really critical. One participant who happened to be a healthcare provider said that on the medical side, there's really thinking of lawyers as what you'd expect as someone who sues you, which is not surprising. It's a surprise that, oh, the law can be used for good to help improve the health of my patients, which I think is great to think about what are our pre-existing thoughts about these different professions, because we're not going to work well together if we don't understand what we're doing. And talking about barriers, funding is an ongoing challenge. I think that's true pretty much throughout. Oftentimes there's academic logistics. You're working within a large institution. There's red tape. Hard to get things done. Sometimes there's a misunderstanding of the role of legal services, what they're there to do. In my volunteering, I had a patient ask me if the lawyer would then represent them in suing the institution. So sort of not quite understanding what they're there for. And then oftentimes professional schools are siloed, and this is really what everyone hit on. Oftentimes there's a geographic distance where the law school and the medical school are not in the same city. And oftentimes there's a scheduling issue too, which Heather spoke to, is sometimes we're dealing with a quarter system and a semester schedule, and how do you get people in the same classroom? Also a curriculum challenge. The accrediting bodies require a certain amount of law and a certain amount of science, and how do you get in teaching social determinants of health and create opportunities for collaboration? One participant said, typically in medical school or in law school in particular, we don't teach students how to collaborate. It's hard to do this. Talking about facilitators, participants noted that MLP is widely accepted and really well-liked of people who do it. It provides a great opportunity for informal education, especially when students have an opportunity to work with patients. They're really getting to have a hands-on education. Some participants noted that they were impressed with the lawyer's ability to navigate the healthcare system and also work with patients on ongoing complex legal issues. The people who do this are passionate, which is wonderful. And that it really creates an opportunity for collaborative relationships for students to learn from one another in a classroom with different disciplines. It's just a much richer conversation when you have multiple disciplines present in the classroom, is what one participant said. So, models of MLP education. Many of, I think, 7 sites had an opportunity for hands-on experience where students could do things like work with a patient to sign up for Medicaid, and really giving them a chance to walk through that process and see how arduous it is. Another site would go with patients to the grocery store to buy groceries on a budget and kind of figure out how access to healthy food, how difficult that can be. Some sites included policy initiatives like petitioning to bring in farmers markets into urban areas. One site, interestingly, worked with individual patients over a long period of time. They're high utilizers of the system and would track them specifically to deal with chronic ongoing issues. They had many legal issues and many health issues. A number of sites also had cross-listed courses where students could presumably easily just enroll, although we know that's not always the case. And several sites also had legal training where the lawyers would help healthcare providers ask different questions that would then maybe elicit some of the underlying legal issues to make referrals. So, in discussing their ideal model, the participants shared with us that the teaching of the social determinants of health is critical and often not taught in a traditional setting, that creating opportunities for teamwork across disciplines is also very important, as is creating opportunities for students to get involved with patient-client care. It's very important right now to create opportunities for to build metrics into the system and then to evaluate our outcomes through testing, through evaluation. Opportunity for fellowships, I think, is an ongoing, would be great for all of us newbie graduates to find ways to get involved. And the creation of a national curriculum, which I think would be wonderful, and we're moving in that direction. So our policy recommendations and conclusions from this study: interdisciplinary education is critical and really should include as many types of students as you can in the classroom. I think it would be great to have undergrads in there with the grad students as well. And the more access you have, the better, and more you can learn from each other. That social determinants of health education is necessary, and that now is a great time to take next steps in evaluation metrics, finding ways to test this material, and then we can assess the quality and effectiveness of different types of teaching, since it really is very varied. So that's it. If you have any questions, my contact information.